Hello, I'm Jay, and this is Highbrow Theater, a podcast where we analyze theater so you don't have to. For today's show, we have a writer, actor, director, producer, and editor, believe it or not, who put all those skills to the test to make his short film called Non-Ek. Please welcome John Walbold. Hi, John.
Hey, Jay. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem.
So happy. happy to be here.
Admittedly, I was a little nervous about this, but
what?
I know, because it's just, but you have I've already gotten like a relaxing energy from you, and it's very nice.
Good. Well, I am relaxed right now. I've had a couple glasses of wine, and I'm ready to be an open book for you.
Great. I'm glad that you joined the club. You'll fit right in here.
yeah, definitely.
Because I have some questions that I would like to get you to know you better before we move into Non-Ek, if you don't mind.
Anything, go for it.
Great. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Did you have a spark moment where you were like, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, in terms of theater, is that what you mean?
Yeah, or making films.
Yeah, it was definitely theater first. So I went to UC Irvine, and I went there as an engineering major. But I always was into the arts. I always loved it. And I remember I was kind of taking some arts classes on the side, just for the fun of it. And then I saw a production of Bat Boy, and it was like the smallest production that was probably ever done. And I think the number was Joyful Noise or Joyful Noise Reprise or whatever it was, where the Bat Boy's tap dancing and everyone's singing gospel around him. And I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. I got to do something around this. And then my journey to theater was a little bit longer story, but I remember that being one of the milestones where I was just like, what is, like, this world is so cool. Like, this is just awesome.
That's so fun. It really is a testament to the magic that you really have to experience it to get it.
Oh, yeah. And I have a hard time explaining it sometimes, honestly, because I think a lot, you know, it's the stereotypical question of like, why do you love theater? And like, most of the time I would say, I don't really know, but I just know that when I'm there, I really like it, you know? And that's me. I don't need to be able to explain it. I just know, like, there's, I keep going back for a reason, you know?
Exactly. Now, when you have an idea that you want to expand into a project, what is step one for you?
Honestly, let's see. I think I take manageable steps. So I try and set goals for myself that I know that I can achieve. So for example, if my goal was to, like, someday I do want to create a Broadway show, but that that's maybe not part of my immediate goals. I am big into how do I not necessarily achieve my goal right now, but how do I take a big step towards my ultimate goal? And so, for example, Non-Ek, which was, you know, an original piece that I wrote, that was actually after several other steps that I took. And so for me, it's not necessarily about waiting until I have my original idea that I'm going to put all my weight behind, but always being active and taking steps. Like, even right now, it's like, you know, everything shut down. And it's like, how do I keep busy? How do I keep growing? And so when it comes to something like Non-Ek, what's the first step? I feel like I've already kind of laid the groundwork for a lot of it. So it's just sort of like, I've already figured out the steps I need to take. And I guess if it was something that I am writing originally, it is the writing and just getting the script as good as possible, because I think that's the foundation for everything. And if that's strong, then and you're going to find a lot of success. And if it's weak, then there's not much you can do with it. But if I wasn't writing something, if I was collaborating with other people, which I've done in the past, it's just really trying to make sure that I am partnering with someone who I really believe in, and we can set a goal that like we can be sure to knock out. Like the only reason we would fail is because we didn't try hard enough.
Oh, that's really nice. You're so like, I love this. This is so much fun. Okay.
Now, I love it too, man.
Oh, yay. Okay, good. You mentioned getting the script down. So what is a good writing environment to you? Like, I know I like it quiet where I can speak out loud to myself and kind of read it and hear it. So I was wondering what yours would be.
Yeah, I guess quiet. I mean, I think sometimes I try and fool myself and say like, oh, I need to have the right music on and this and that. But, but yeah, I mean, honestly, that ends up distracting me more than anything, because then it's like, oh, I love this song. And like, oh, I want to look up what other records this artist did. And yeah, I think what you said, just quiet and just, there's no secret to it. You just got to go do it, you know, and just even if I think most theater people are like this. Like we get easily distracted because we're creative people and we're attracted to many things. And I think if you can't find a quiet place, then just like jotting notes down and on your phone in the notes app or anything, just as long as there's constant progress over time where you just keep adding to it and not letting any good ideas just go away, because you won't remember them.
Yeah, there's a common thread in this podcast where I mention Drag Race a lot, but there's a there's a queen named Willem who lives by the mantra of do one thing for your career every day.
Yeah.
And I think that is a good example.
Gosh, if everyone did that, then there would be so much more art in this world, honestly.
It would, and people believed in themselves. Oh.
Yeah, I find that a lot of the time, a lot of the battle I have with my fellow creative friends is trying not to push people too hard and appear rude. But I think people are more powerful than they give themselves credit for, and some people. I mean, especially right now, it's so hard with, I mean, just mentally, everyone's kind of gone through a lot. And sometimes people don't want to lean into the hard stuff. But I think to your point, what that drag queen is saying, you know, I think sometimes people have a tough day and they're like, no, I'll write something tomorrow, or I'll record this YouTube cover tomorrow. And if you can just push yourself to do just a little bit each day, I think they are right on the money. Just keep going.
Yeah, nice. Now, leaning into your art, I believe all art is valid. However, do you think there's a point where it's just no, not that?
Do you mean when, like, I'm thinking of my own stuff or other people, or what, like, what is art? Are we getting?
Well, I know we're getting, that just might be my brain at the moment, but I'm thinking I guess you don't have to like it, but if somebody is making an idea, are there limits? 'Cause like, you know, people have completely wild brains sometimes, but is like, can you say stop?
Well, what I've learned to do is, especially with my friends, because I collaborate with a lot of different people on different random stuff, and I have a lot of friends that we bounce ideas off of, and I've really tried to get in the habit of never telling anyone to stop or say no to their idea. I will give very honest feedback, because I think that's something not a lot of people do. I think a lot of people just say yes to everything and, oh, you're going to make it. Well, we're not all going to make it. We have to really focus and be focused on our crafts. But I try to never tell someone, like if someone has an idea for a project, I never try to say, no, I think that's stupid. I try to look at it as, what are the things that I think need to be addressed in order for it to be successful? So there's There's a lot of styles of humor or a lot of styles of music that I might not think is the greatest thing in the world, but a lot of people do. And so as far as other people, I think we owe it to each other to always try and look for what is the path to success for fellow artists. And, don't be a hater. even if I think your idea sucks, I'm not going to. I'm really trying to stay away from that in my life now. Even if I really think it's garbage, I really need to figure out a way to be constructive and just know that not everyone sees their art the way I see it. And there's probably someone who could get something from it.
And I think that's a really important quality in a leader, because if people notice you saying no all the time, then they're going to feel shunned and like they can't come to you with anything. So yeah. I really like that viewpoint.
Yeah, and it's tough too though, because there it's a tricky thing, I think, because trying to think of how to convey this. There are going to be some people who are let down by any response that is critical or negative or anything but jumping up and down and jumping for joy. And but anytime an artist, if there is a piece of art that I think is garbage, I keep my mouth shut. Because who cares? Life is too short. If someone approaches me and says, hey, I have an idea for a show or a concert I want to do or a cabaret I want to do, or here's a script I'm writing, if I think it's not good for me, I'm not afraid to say, no, I won't be a part of that. But I always try and offer some sort of constructive advice. And there is a tricky thing because that's unfortunately some people will get kind of shut down from that, and the first time they hear no, they'll be like, well, it's all over, I'm not going to do it. So I think this discussion is very important for the artistic world, and especially the theater world, because I think we're all capable of so much, and we're not being very efficient in my mind. We could be creating so much more art than we are.
I kind of had a question about that. What do you hope changes about the quote unquote industry in either theatrical or film?
I wish that currently, if you go to an actor, or if you meet someone who's an actor, particularly a stage actor, and they're like, I love musicals, I want to be in a musical. And you say, okay, have you written any songs for a musical, or have you written any monologues? 99% are going to think, what are you talking about? If you meet someone who says they're a singer or wants to be a recording artist, and you say, oh, have you written any songs? That's a totally normal question. And most of them are going to be like, oh, I've tried, and either, yeah, I've got some good stuff, or I'm bad and I'm working with some other people, or I'm trying to work it out. The biggest thing I would change in theater is that the people who want to be a part of it, the default perspective is that they are going to create rather than hope that someone else creates the right thing for them.
Oh, yeah.
Because, and it again goes back to what I was saying before, I think people are so creative, and sometimes they don't believe in themselves enough. And it's like, no, you guys, we're all so creative. We all have a story worth telling. And second to that, I would change if people didn't, maybe you try writing and it's just garbage, and that happens. Not everyone's good at everything, but I wish people would try. But if people don't have a story to tell, or they're just not ready to try writing, I wish more people would try producing stuff for other people. Because those are two things that I've done firsthand, and I think so many people are capable of. I think anyone with the willpower to try and do something they believe in can be a producer or a writer. And I think that would solve like 99% of the problems that people have with theater. Because, it's like, there are so many people who are passionate about how things should be run, how stories should be told. And I think we have a huge shortage of people actually who are striving to be in those positions. And I think we would have so much positive change if the default was, all right, let's do it. Like, what's your story? Or what stories do you want to support? Let's do it.
Yeah, the more diverse opinions you have,
yeah,
that creates such a richer story.
Absolutely. And this is a, I mean, this is a huge issue that people are talking about with, like, what story, especially if we're talking about theater, like, what, you know, what stories are being told on Broadway. And I've had so many conversations with people in the last year where, because I truly think there is a shortage of writers. I really do think that. And I've asked people, I'm like, what are these musicals that are getting looked over? Because usually if something is created that is inherently awesome, people find out about it, whether I think it's awesome or not. I mean, there have been a few musicals that are written and then it takes 5-8 years. I think Hadestown took, I think it was written 2012. And they just had enough fan base behind it. Or if you look at, what's it called? Be More Chill. That just went viral on Spotify. Yeah. And then and people are like, oh, there's a demand for this show. Okay, let's do it. And I feel like people, I think there's not as many good shows, original shows, as people want to believe there is. And I think if more people took it upon themselves to just, like, go for it, try writing something, like, you know, I can't write your stories for you. I have the stories that I want to write, and I wish more people would, because it's like you said, like, the more diversity of opinions and points of view and life experiences, like, that stuff is awesome. Like, that's more exciting mm-hmm. to watch.
And there seems to be a kind of formulaic tunnel that is like, this is working, I want to try it, but put a little spin on it. That's why there's like 72 cop shows, but like, maybe yeah. like, you know, just step a little to the line and see what happens, and then go further, and then you started a whole other thing. It's like,
yeah well, and that, and with that whole thing, like, where you're talking about, you have this sort of repetitive formula for what works, like on TV and even on Broadway, where it's like, okay, what movie are we adapting? I mean,
oh my god.
But part of that is due to a lack of original musicals being written, because what happens is you have all these Broadway producers who their whole existence is trying to make shows happen. And because the money is out there, the money is out there to get shows produced. But you have to create something that's attractive on some level. And so if you can't find awesome original musical, you can easily put a team together and say, okay, I'm going to grab the rights for this famous movie that every middle-aged woman loves, and then we're going to get a writing team, and oh, here we go, we got Pretty Woman the musical, which I don't think any critic liked, but hey, it put actors, it employed people, it employed artists, and then we have that show. And I think that's why all those shows are happening, because there's a demand for musicals, and it's like, okay, if there's no writers presenting with us with stuff, like, we're gonna hire teams to make remakes of movies, you know, mm-hmm. like.
And there's also the societal weight of, oh, a writer? Are you even gonna, anytime, anything artistic, what are you gonna do with that? Are you going to make money? Like, that's not it. You know, I can't imagine myself doing anything else.
Do you write, by the way?
Oh, not as a primary, but oh, I do dabble sometimes.
Oh, okay, good. I was going to say, if we're talking about this, we need to get, we need the highbrow musical coming out.
Oh, we'll be in touch. Now, are you a New York native?
No, I grew up in Northern California. Northern California and school in Southern California, but I've been in New York. I put my roots down 5 years ago, and then before that I was dropping in every now and then to audition.
Oh, yeah. Is that what beckoned you, was the auditions, and then you're like, you know what, let's just Let's just solidify this.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, so I did a couple years of I did like some regional theater, and I did some cruise ships and theme parks, and then basically it was turning 30. I mean, and those of you under 30 listening, it's going to be a milestone for you. You're going to have your moment where you're like, what am I doing in this world? This I have only a limited amount of time. And I realized I had not done much work towards my Broadway dream, and so that's when I put my roots down. It was like, I'm not gonna do travel jobs anymore. I'm gonna figure out what I can do in New York.
Speaking of Broadway dreams and musicals, I saw that you were the creator of the popular apps Pocket Pitch and Pocket Guitar Chords,
That's
which
right.
that is so cool. Does that mean you want to make a musical because you are musically inclined?
Oh, I definitely want to do a musical eventually. That's part of my bigger goal. I have written music in the past, and it's of my talents. It is something I'm very self-critical of. So I think that'll take me some time. But I think I have a play I'm working on right now. So that's probably the more immediate goal. But eventually, yeah, I want to do musicals and, And the apps are kind of a side passion project because I'm a nerd.
Yeah, did your engineering experience help with that at all?
I mean, my engineering experience was a flash in the pan. That was pretty brief because I switched over to drama pretty quick. But I mean, I am like technologically inclined, and I do have the math brain. But actually, for that project, for those, well, actually, only for one of them, I hired a freelance programmer, and that was for Pocket Pitch because that was a little bit more complex than I could trust myself with. And then Pocket Guitar Chords was a simple enough app that I could put that together myself.
See, look at you getting ideas, executing them. A good example for the audience.
I mean, gotta do something. I mean, it's especially when you live in New York. I mean, it's a tough city, and it kind of sucks to live there. And so because of that discomfort, you are very driven to try and do big things, and whatever they may be, it really pushes you to kind of go for it.
Thank you for that, John. Now, I would like to move on to the creme de la creme of this episode, the short film Non-Ek, which you participated in almost every facet because you are headstrong, I will say. Let's start with something basic. In your words, if you pitch this, what is your pitch? Like, what's You go into the pitch meeting, here's this idea, and here's what it's about.
Yeah, that's a good question because I'm working on that. So it is about what it is to be at the bottom of the acting ladder in New York City, and everything seems to go against you. And it's kind of using humor to tell that story. For theater people who have probably watched Smash, I think of Smash as like that's really the world of the Broadway people. And even though they tell stories of people who are like, oh, I'm working at a bar for, a week, and then, oh, my show that I wrote is suddenly getting picked up and getting all this attention. Like
Yeah.
that is a story that represents a very small amount of people in New York, maybe less than 1%. But after living in New York for a long period of time, there isn't a show that really encompasses what it is like to just get your butt kicked day after day and all the ups and downs. And sometimes you fall out of love with it, sometimes you get back into love with it. And so, when I watch TV shows, I love shows that really represent a certain life experience, and I know very well what it is to be a non-ec actor in New York City. So I wanted to kind of tell my story, even though the characters are, you know, not really me, but there's a lot of me in them. And I also, you know, I wanted to make something that wasn't just for me, but for all the non-union actors who go to New York, they get their butts kicked, and then like life happens, and you know, 40 years go by, and they think back to that experience, and I wanted something that was a fun representation of that, whether or not they find success in theater, you know, however you define that. But I wanted something that kind of represents us, like, you know, mm-hmm. just down in the dirt, like getting our hands dirty and just like having the best time and having the worst time.
Did you start this with theater people in mind as the ideal audience? Because I was watching it and hilarious, because I'm like, yep, uh-huh, you got it. But I don't know if somebody like who's like a hedge fund, whatever, if they they tuned in and they're like, what is this?
Yeah, no, well, thanks for saying that. I'm glad you liked it. I was a little nervous about that. I wrote it specifically for theater people, because I was just like, you know what, like, I'm just gonna make something as authentic to theater people as possible. And I was nervous because I, you know, there's all these like references and jokes that you really have to be ingrained in the theater world to get it all. But then what was so interesting was I would show it to all sorts of people. And whenever someone was watching it who wasn't a theater person, I would always like, you know, do sort of a disclaimer and be like, you know, you might not get all the jokes, and like kind of apologize ahead of time. But what was interesting was that like people who aren't in theater like it. And I think it's because, like, I've noticed this about myself too. If I watch something that is really authentic to its community, even if there are things I don't get the reference to, it's almost like I'm subconsciously acknowledging that this is a real representation mm-hmm. of this experience. And I can kind of look past that and just enjoy the fact that this is a window into another world that I don't know. So it kind of worked out.
Yeah, and I think that's important for art consumption, because if you look at something face value and you're like, I don't get it, walking away, then you missed out on that experience.
Totally, totally. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I think it's, you got to look for the good in everything.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So what made you decide, or what was the deciding factor for this to be a short film instead of a full-length feature?
Money.
Yeah.
I mean, if money was no if I had $1 million, then it if I had $1 million, yeah, I would have done a couple things. I probably would not have made it a feature. I probably would have done a series, and that is still kind of a goal someday, is to turn it into something bigger and make it episodic, because there are endless stories that you can tell about what it's like to be a non-union actor in New York City. But yeah, every restriction I had in this was due to money, hopefully in the future that is not a restriction.
Right. Any TV execs listening, get in on this while it's hot.
Yeah, please. I mean, part of what I was trying to do with it was, it was sort of like, okay, and this is how I approach most of the projects I do. It's sort of like, okay, these are the constraints I have. So particularly with non-ec, I was sort of like, let me try and show that I can write, you know, a 20 plus minute episode of a TV show, so that and direct it, and show that if someone is watching, like a producer or whoever, they can see that, oh, this guy, like, if he just had the money and resources, he could do several episodes of this. So, I totally agree. Producers listening.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I would like to talk about the cast, because it was such a diverse group of characters. Like, I don't think anyone's identity was repeated, which was really refreshing. Now, is that a reflection of the casting rooms, or is that something you wish to see changed?
With this project, in terms of how I cast it, there isn't too much of a bigger picture goal associated with it, because for this size project and basically because of how much of my personal money I invested into it and like how much was at risk, it was the only thing, the real driving force was like, who do I know that I can trust who can represent, you know, these different characters that I want and can and represent as many different stories as I can cram into this little thing. And fortunately, it worked out. Fortunately, I had, you know, I know a lot of, anyone who lives in New York is going to know a lot of different people. You know, as far as, you know, it's tough because, like, any 20-minute piece is not going to effectively represent the entire New York City community. There's just so many different people. So I can't claim that I feel like, oh, I did it, I nailed it, you know, because there's always, I mean, there's just so many different people. And, you know, if I am able to make this into a series, like, that would be a priority for me, is to just flood it with as many different types of people as possible. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't like giving too many spoilers, but I mean, like, one of my friends who's a drag queen is in it, because I mean, drag is hand in hand with New York musical theater. I mean, like, you know what I mean? And it's like, I had a part for audition monitor that had, like, I think it started with like two lines, and I was like, well, anyone can do these two lines. Like, what the hell? Like, let's throw a drag queen in here. Why the hell not? You know, like, let's have as much fun with every part as possible. And I was really happy with the entire cast. As far as the bigger question of sort of the diversity of the audition rooms, I mean, it's kind of going back to what we were saying earlier. Like, not even theater, that's too narrow a scope, but just like artistic expression is just way more interesting when there's more types of people and points of view. And yeah, I hope it gets as diverse as possible. It's just way more fun.
It was so much fun because they bring their own je ne sais quoi to the to the party.
Yeah. I mean, like, especially, yeah, I mean, just like traveling the world and seeing how, like, you know, America isn't the greatest thing ever. I mean, like, we are a country. Like, there are a lot of great things about being in this country, but then you go a couple other places, I mean, and it's just like, wow, there is so much out there. Or even just going to different states, it's like, there are so many cool stories and so many cool people. And so yeah, I was able to get 6 different people, hopefully in the future more.
Good. Now, you said that you like to work with people you trust. Now, did you put out a casting call, or did you pick people that you knew already?
I did not put out a casting call. I would not work with a stranger on that project. So many of my projects up to, I'm basically at that point now where my next project that I'm kind of working on, I might have to do some public casting calls. But up until this point, it's so I'll stick with Nonek. You know, Caitlin, the lead actress who plays Stacy, she is actually someone that, like, we had been talking for like 6 to 9 months. Because we had wanted to work together. I knew her pretty well, and I just knew, like, what, she's so off the walls funny and and just like crazy. She's just like, I've said it so many times. She is the epitome of a hot mess. And she, like, sometimes the way, like, just seeing her talk, you just stop and watch her. And it's like, I feel like I'm watching a TV show right now. And so I had wanted to work with her for a long time. And before Non-Ec, I was mostly doing cabarets and concerts for a bunch of different awesome singers. And she had always wanted to do something like that. And in the back of my mind, I was just like, I don't know. I think there's something else for this girl. Like, I mean, she is an awesome singer, but like, I don't know if I believe that that is her ultimate thing. And then when I was coming up with the idea that I wanted to do a short film that could possibly be a series that was about New York City actors at the bottom, I was just like, well, it has to be, first of all, it has to be a girl because there are way more girls than guys in New York. And I was just like, I want someone who just, you know, people love watching. And then it was just like, well, heck, I've been wanting to work with this girl, Caitlin, for so long that it was just a no-brainer. And then it was sort of like, well, wait a minute. I need a co-star. I need, like, it can't just be her. And so I was thinking, like, well, what's the second person going to be in relation to them? And I was like, should it be another girl? Because there are a lot of girls in New York, or should it be a love interest? And then I was like, you know what? Like, it's gotta be the gay friend who is also attacking the world, because like, that is New York musical theater. It's girls and gays, you know, trying to fulfill their dreams. That's what it is.
Yes.
And like, my friend Josh Pemberton, like, he is ridiculously funny too. And as soon as I thought of the two of them together, and I mean, anyone who watches it is always just like, their chemistry is so good. And it's just like, yeah, as soon as I thought of them in my mind, I was like, this is a show. This has to happen. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else kind of fell into place because I built the cast around them. And fortunately, I think this will happen with anyone who lives in New York long enough. You meet, the theater community is a small community, and you eventually meet everyone. And I was able to find all the people that I needed to surround those two. You know, Megan is, she has none of the negative traits that her character has in the film. She is totally positive. But she is that young shining star who is destined for Broadway. And Paul is that great, clean cut, all American guy. And so, yeah, it was just by virtue of living in New York long enough that I knew all these people. And Philip, or Jasmine DeVille, who was our drag queen, and Lisa Asher, who was the other audition monitor. You know, these are just, these are all the different types of people you're going to meet if you live in New York long enough.
Yeah, and everyone is really bouncing off each other, and I didn't find myself disliking anyone. Like, even in the situations where it could have happened, I just didn't. It was so much fun.
That was a goal. I was like, anytime someone is just a total jerk, I want it to be like in a fun way where you kind of get it. You're like, yeah, I guess I'm kind of a jerk sometimes too. Or, you know, like, it's just like, we all get it. We're all, you know, especially in New York, the audition rooms are just tense. It brings out the worst in everyone.
Oh my God. If this is too much of a spoiler, I'll cut it out. But
no,
when,
go for it. Let's do it.
When Stacey and Stephanie were by themselves,
yeah,
just like at their own separate one,
yeah,
I was losing it.
That is every audition room, right? It's like, it's everyone trying to, and it's like, yeah, I probably did it too when I was in those audition rooms. It's like everyone trying to one up one another in like the subtlest way, and you might not even realize you're doing it, but it's like, my college was so great, and like, oh yeah, like my college program is really good. And it's like, okay, like, get over yourself. Like, we're all like, come on. Like, it's just, it's so silly.
I know, but it's fun to watch.
Hey, I mean, the way I look at it is that all the negative traits in those characters I have had at one point. So it's really, it's not me making fun of anyone other than myself. It really isn't.
Self-expose. It adds another layer.
Yeah, I mean, there was one person who thought I was making negative commentary on like the world of non-union actors, and I was like, well, that, I mean, that's me. You know, and there are other people who are like that too, but you know, but it's all in fun. It's all, you know, what a crazy world it is, and you know, but we keep going back to it because we love it.
Right. We have to. Now, how did you decide which platforms to put Non-Ek on? Because it is available on Amazon Video and Tubi.
Yeah. So this is good for, I guess, for anyone who wants to get into independent filmmaking. I tried Venmo, or not Venmo, Vimeo On Demand. I tried YouTube a little bit, but ultimately what I went with was a service called Film Hub, and they're kind of a film distributor. They describe themselves as a online marketplace or something like that. They're kind of changing things a little bit, but basically they are a third party that I use. They have all the technical stuff, and they submit the film to different platforms, and different platforms think that the film is right for them, then they pick it up, and then all the money is kind of done in one concise platform, so to speak. And so yeah, they're kind of a middleman that really helps, because the world of indie film distribution is a total train wreck. It's a total mess.
Yeah, there seem to be the like two indie film production and distributors, and if it's not in that, they're like, let's name names. A24. If it's like it's like A24, they're like, ooh, it's gonna be dark,
yeah,
and deep and like thought provoking and Saoirse Ronan. But if you we keep coming back, just give it a chance.
Yeah, it's so based on what I've learned, because this is my first film, but I'm just sharing this for people who are jumping into the indie film space, which is totally rewarding. Everyone do it. Everyone write your own stuff. Everyone film your own stuff. It's totally worth it. But it's kind of changing now. And if you think about the music industry, once again, you know, years ago, you had to go through the big music labels to get anything done. Now you see people like Chance the Rapper, who does independent, or you look at Billie Eilish, who made a Grammy award-winning album with her brother in their bedroom that they grew up in. Mm-hmm. The platforms and the way things are done is changing. Some of it makes it harder, some of it makes it easier. Film Hub is something to consider, but also, you know, some people are just using YouTube now. It's a tricky thing. I've tried with this film, I've just tried to figure out how do I get it in front of as many people as possible. So in terms of how I decided things, it's kind of like I try one thing, then I learn from it and keep moving, just keep going.
Yeah, and I think that is, I guess I'll say should be the goal of art, is to just have people see it. I guess personal goals. Like, you shouldn't go into it and being like, this is going to get me somewhere. You know, just make it and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree and disagree. just to throw some conflict into this.
Yeah.
this good. Podcast. Why not? Let's cause some drama. I do think that it is, I am a big believer in people figuring out the business side and the money side. Not that you have to, you know, give up your soul, But I do think there is value in figuring out a little bit of, yeah, getting the most eyes on it, but in a way that might be most beneficial to the longevity of the project, I'll say. For example, I have a lot of friends who have thrown a lot of money into different projects and then nothing happens. But I've also had some friends who, for example, my friend Kristen Plotty, who everyone should go check out on Spotify. She is a recording artist and she has done that where she has released her music to the masses on Spotify and iTunes Music and all that stuff. So you can listen to it all for free, but there is a business approach too, where she was able to get picked up for a Macy's national commercial. And so I just wanted to throw that in there because she was able to figure out some good business decisions with the approach to releasing her art. That money was able allowed her to fund further projects. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so I think that's something worth throwing in there to the mix,
It
that
is.
not all money is evil. Just don't let it turn your heart to stone.
Right, because unfortunately it is needed to at least get by.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
So
yeah.
yeah, you
And it
gotta.
can make other cool stuff. You can make cool art with it. I mean it yeah, I mean the money is what pays the salaries on Broadway, you know,
Yeah.
and you know, so it like it or not, it's there.
Now, speaking of getting things noticed, Non Ek has won several awards at several film festivals. So, a round of applause. I might put in an audience clapping or something.
Thank you. Thank you all.
So, how has the festival circuit affected your attitude towards creating, either positively, negatively, or both?
My approach with this film was I'm going to submit it to whoever I can, because the information about film festivals is pretty gray, and there are a lot. And so my approach was sort of like, I'm gonna try everything, and I'm gonna learn from all my mistakes. And so what I will share with people, because I hope the millions listening make their own films, and I want to spare people some learning experiences that I had. Not all film festivals are created equal. And the reason that film festivals exist is because 20 years ago, the only way your independent film could be seen in front of an audience was that if you went to a film festival and they put it on the projector in the movie theater and everyone sat there and watched it. But now with YouTube and everything else, you don't need it. You can create something that goes viral and you don't need film festivals. So to answer your question, what I have learned is that we have so many valuable resources with the technology today. We don't need to follow the recipe that worked for the generation before us. And sometimes if you do follow that recipe, you might lose a lot of money. It's a complicated thing because there are so many positive things about the film festival world. And there are so many negative things. One negative thing is that everyone who submits their film to a film festival does not care about all the other films in that film festival. They go into it thinking, I'm gonna win the award, and I'm gonna be, the next Quentin Tarantino. And that is a very negative thing. And I realized that I was doing that myself when I first started. And so it made me realize that I needed to be more supportive of other people. I needed to take the time to see what other people were putting out there and make sure that if I am putting Nanak out there to a film festival, that there is some greater reason behind it other than just trying to get an award. Because mm-hmm. What does the award really do?
Yeah.
You know, does it make you happier in life, or does it make your relationships better, or does it, you know, it's like, you, I mean, it really is a bigger thing where you really have to take a step back and think like, what am I really trying to do with my time on Earth?
Ooh, and with that, I think it's time that we wrap it up. This was so much fun. Thank you for being here, John. And as I said before, to get your eyes on this lovely award-winning film of which we've been discussing, you can head on over to Amazon Prime Video or Tubi, or you can head to nonek.com. That's nonek.com. John, where can people find you online?
John Walbolt, or on Instagram, at John Walbolt, or johnwalbolt.com. Just Google.
Yeah, and I will officially endorse that Instagram because he is quite the meme king over there. And it is.
Yeah.
Yes, your I story. Memes.
I think memes are one of the best things that the internet has produced.
It's like that 1 second of dopamine.
Yeah.
Perfection.
yeah. It just brings everyone together.
It really does. So if you would like to keep up with Highbrow Theater, you can find us on Twitter at Highbrow Theater. We have a Patreon. If you search Patreon and Highbrow Theater, it will take you right there where you can see the lovely benefits that may ensue. And thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Jay. Thanks for having me on. This was great.
It was so much fun.
It was an honor to be on here.
Talk to you later.
See ya. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.